Section 18. Levels of going for refuge. In a survey of Buddhism, I drew attention to the fact that going for refuge is not an act to be done once and for all time, but that it is something which grows with one's understanding of Buddhism. Thus, not only does the act of going for refuge take place within a wider context, it also takes place on different levels, passage from one to another of which constitutes one's spiritual life as a Buddhist. According to tradition, there are two levels of going for refuge, the mundane and the transcendental. But in a talk on going for refuge which I gave in 1978 at the Western Buddhist Order's 10th anniversary convention, I distinguished altogether six. This talk was given on April the 3rd, which means that it was given almost exactly 10 years ago. And my six levels of going for refuge were the cultural, the provisional, the effective, the real, the ultimate, and the cosmic. Before describing these levels, I reminisced for a few minutes about my own experience of formal going for refuge, that is, my own experience of reciting the words of the three refuges and the 5 or 10 precepts prior to the founding of the Western Buddhist Order. And in this connection, described 6 different incidents, some of which I have dealt with in the first half of this paper. These incidents, like many others I could have mentioned, showed that appreciation of the real significance of going for refuge was rather lacking in Buddhist circles in the East and even in Buddhist circles in the West. The refuges were simply something one recited or something that showed one was a Buddhist in the merely social sense. They were a sort of flag which was waved on special occasions. If one went to the temple on Wesak Day or recited the refuges as one also did when there was a wedding or a name-giving or a memorial service or a public meeting. Not that there was anything wrong with reciting the refuges, I hastened to add. The trouble was that people generally recited them without thinking about their meaning. In my experience, it was only the Tibetans who had any appreciation of what going for refuge really meant or any realization of its tremendous, indeed its central, importance in and for the Buddhist life. Elsewhere in the Buddhist world, people seemed to have forgotten its importance. True, they recited the refuges often enough, and it was good that they recited them, but hardly ever did they actually go for refuge. This was really surprising. The significance of going for refuge was clear enough from the Buddhist scriptures, especially from the Pali scriptures. Time and again in those scriptures did one find the Buddha giving a teaching, and time and again did one find the recipient of that teaching responding to his words with exclamations of amazement and wonder, and with a heartfelt declaration, "I go for refuge to the Buddha, to his Dharma, and to his Sangha." This was no mere recitation of a formula. It was the response of one's total being to the truth. One committed oneself to the truth, surrendered to the truth, wanted to devote one's whole life to the truth. And this effect could be produced not only by the hearing of the Dharma, but also by the sight of the Buddha or the sight of the Sangha, or even by the sight of a team of order members and mitras at work. Thus, the importance of going for refuge was clear from the Buddhist scriptures, even though the greater part of the Buddhist world might have forgotten it. And having shown this, I turned to my 6 levels of going for refuge. Cultural going for refuge, which could also be called formal or ethnic going for refuge, was the going for refuge of those Eastern Buddhists who did not actually follow Buddhism as a spiritual teaching, though they might be positively influenced by it on the social level, and who made no effort to evolve spiritually, but who were nonetheless very proud of Buddhism as part of their cultural heritage, and who definitely considered themselves ethnic Buddhists. Such people recited the refuges as an affirmation of their cultural and national identity, and even went so far as to claim that they were born Buddhists, though in truth, one could no more be a born Buddhist than one could, according to the Buddha, be a born Brahmin. In our own movement, there was no cultural going for refuge because no one was a born Buddhist. But there was perhaps something like it when someone was attracted to the movement as a positive group and happily joined in everything we did, including chanting the refuges. Provisional going for refuge went beyond cultural going for refuge but fell short of effective going for refuge. Here, someone who was a born Buddhist, in the sense of having been born into Buddhist surroundings, started taking Buddhism seriously to some extent, even started practicing it to some extent, but did not really commit himself or herself either to Buddhism or to his or her own spiritual development. He or she might, however, be aware of the possibility, even the desirability, of committing oneself, and might be thinking of doing so later on. In our own movement, this level of going for refuge was represented by the Mitra, who regarded himself or herself as belonging to the FWBO, who meditated regularly, who helped out in various practical ways, and who might be thinking of ordination. Effective going for refuge consisted in actually committing oneself to the three jewels. Since I was addressing a gathering of order members, there was no need for me to elaborate, as I indeed remarked at the time, for they all knew very well that what effective going for refuge meant, and that it corresponded to upasaka-upasika ordination in the Western Buddhist order. I therefore confined myself to saying a few words about the esoteric refuges, that is, the guru, the deva, and the dakini, particularly about the dakini. Before so doing, however, I pointed out that while effective going for refuge corresponded to upasaka-upasika ordination in the Western Buddhist order, the traditional Buddhist socio-religious categories were, in fact, becoming less and less relevant to us. Perhaps it would be better if we spoke not in terms of upasaka-upasika ordination, but simply of ordination, or even of threefold commitment, i.e. commitment with body, speech and mind, a speculation that no doubt foreshadowed the development with which I shall be dealing in section 20. Real going for refuge took place when one developed insight and wisdom, and thus entered upon the transcendental path, or, in other words, became a stream entrant. In traditional terms, real going for refuge was transcendental going for refuge, all the previous refuges, even effective going for refuge, being mundane, which was quite a sobering thought. Until one had entered the stream, one could fall aback, could leave the spiritual community, resign from the order. For this reason, a positive, spiritually supportive environment was of the utmost importance, at least until such time as one entered the stream. Ultimate going for refuge occurred when one attained enlightenment. On this level, one did not go to any outside refuge, but was one's own refuge. In fact, on this level, there was neither inside nor outside, neither self nor other. Cosmic going for refuge was not exactly another level of going for refuge, but referred to the evolutionary process, that is, referred to the lower evolution and the higher evolution. First came the amoeba, then the mollusk, then the fish, the reptile, the bird, and the mammal. Finally, there came a man, Homo sapiens. Looking at this process, what one in fact saw was a going for refuge. Each form of life aspired to develop into a higher form, or, so to speak, went for refuge to that higher form. This might sound impossibly poetic, but it was what one saw. In man, the evolutionary process became conscious of itself. This was the higher evolution. When the higher evolution became conscious of itself, and it became conscious of itself in and through the spiritually committed individual, this was going for refuge in the sense of effective going for refuge. Through our going for refuge, we are united, as it were, with all living beings, who in their own way and on their own level, in a sense, also went for refuge. Thus, going for refuge was not simply a particular devotional practice, or even a threefold act of individual commitment, but the key to the mystery of existence. 3 or 4 years later, I gave another talk on going for refuge. The talk was given in Bombay to a mixed audience of theosophists and ex-untouchable Buddhists, and in it, I approached the subject via my experience of our new Buddhist movement in the West, involvement with which culminated in joining the order, or, in more traditional terms, going for refuge with the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. In the course of this talk, I distinguished only four levels of going for refuge: the provisional, the effective, the real, and the absolute, that is, the ultimate. Ethnic going for refuge being subsumed under provisional going for refuge, and cosmic going for refuge being omitted. Real going for refuge was, however, correlated with the opening of the Dharma eye, or eye of truth, the third of the five eyes, Buddhist tradition, and this in turn with transcendental going for refuge and with stream entry. Indeed, having discussed the three fetters, i.e. self-view, doubt, and dependence on moral rules and religious observances, the breaking of which was equivalent to stream entry, and distinguished between commitment and lifestyle, I raised the question of the nature of the relation between the arising of the bodhicitta, going for refuge, the opening of the Dharma eye, stream entry, and going forth, and explained it as follows. The bodhicitta, or the arising of the bodhicitta, represents, we may say, the more altruistic dimension of these four other experiences. Or rather, all five of them, including the bodhicitta itself, represent the five different aspects of a single, basic, crucial, and unique spiritual experience. The going for refuge draws attention to the emotional and volitional aspect of this experience, the opening of the Dharma eye to the unconditioned depth of its cognitive content, stream entry to the permanent and far-reaching nature of its effects, while going forth into homelessness draws attention to the extent of the reorganization which, regardless of whether or not one becomes a monk in the formal sense, the experience inevitably brings about in the pattern of one's daily life. As for the bodhicitta, it represents, as I have said, the altruistic or other regarding aspect of the experience. End of quote.